Fire up the queue, put those drinks on ice. It is a Wednesday edition of the Morning Tailgate. Welcome in to the nation, to the tailgaters. We got a great show for you on tap. 7:30, Marcus Johnson, Tate Don't Lie. He's going to help break down the good, the bad, maybe a little bit of the ugly from
week
two. Need
some help on the run game, right?
I have a feeling that's going to be a point of contention with Marcus.
Well.
8:30. How about this? Chief National Reporter for the NFL Network, Steve Wyche, will join us. We're going to talk about what that NFL national narrative perspective is when
the
it comes
narrative.
To the silver
and black.
It's
always about narratives nowadays, huh, Vince?
Everyone's got a narrative.
Everyone's got a narrative. Even when there isn't a narrative,
everyone's
we say, you have a narrative.
Got a narrative, and everyone's trying to spin a narrative. That's
people,
the other one.
Sometimes people are just talking out of their you-know-what.
I don't
Not
know
us.
What, Vinny.
Not
Tell
us,
me,
Vince.
Out of what? 945 Street Legal with Sam and Ash will join us.
Pinky.
Clay.
Big toe.
Have we turned the page? It's Wednesday. Is the page turned, or is it still? Is the crease still?
It's kind of like that dog ear on the end of the page, where it's like still kind of like available for you to pick at and pull open, or maybe it's like an open pamphlet. That page is still kind of like flapping.
Did
in the
they
crease.
Play Sunday? did they play a game? I don't even remember.
If
what
you
happened.
Ask the national media, we wouldn't know. The Ravens did.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Hey, speaking of dogs. my dog's not happy right now. Murphy, he's not a fan.
Named after?
A beer. Murphy's beer.
Murphy's beer. Where's that out of?
It's delicious.
Erie, Pennsylvania.
Actually, I don't know where it's from. Just I remember.
I've never heard Clay?
Murphy's beer. Clay?
Sounds like Ireland.
It's very Irish. Yeah.
Are you giving Murphy's beer? Because maybe that's the problem. He's not getting enough Murphy's
I
beer.
I can't confirm or deny if he was a pup. He may or may not have. Can't confirm or
deny.
They love beer.
But he was not a fan of it's sweater weather, folks.
Oh. I thought you were going to say
the windows
were,
are opening. But now
beautiful.
He hears everything.
Yeah.
And so now he gets very upset. So he doesn't sleep well
talking
at night.
To his friends.
Yeah, so he doesn't sleep well at night. So this morning he just was standing up, kind of eyes closed, just
or hearing the gun. hearing the gunshots like we heard in downtown Baltimore on Saturday
Oh
night.
Boy.
Yeah.
Do we want to dive
a little murder?
Oh my God.
Literally, I'm not, you could go look it up. The Inner Harbor, East Inner Harbor in Little Italy.
I don't want to Google that.
Just eight, bang, 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 bang. Got me out of, I was watching college football because on the East Coast, guess what? You stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning watching college football.
Bang, just bang, bang.
Yeah. Next thing you know.
Clay.
And listen to me. Oh,
Clay's
nice,
on it.
Clay.
Clay's on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so anyway, it was
well, I'm
it was
glad
a
you're back.
Bad scene.
I'm glad you're safe.
Yeah.
I don't know if Clay's glad, but I'm glad. Clay didn't join in. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
We got a good show today. I'm excited.
I know. We're going to hop in, man.
Literally going to start breaking down the tape immediately with Marcus Johnson here in about a half hour, but I'm curious.
You need answers.
Few days removed now, and I guess it's a question we asked last week, but I think it bears repeating this time around. And if we want to open up to the tailgaters, I'm always happy to do that as we are.
702-365-9200.
There it is. What's the confidence level? Getting the run game right week three. Now, we've talked in length about how we all believe, I think it's fair to say, I'm going to speak for all of us, that this is not only a victory that is looming ahead for the Raiders, but a victory that needs to be decisive. So one would think if they are getting right, or as Jason Fitz said, a beer game, you know, that run game is starting to click. How confident, Vinny, are we that run game finds its way?
I am. I can't say that I'm confident that it's going to get turned around. I think they win the game. And we said yesterday, I always love putting cuss words in the middle of words. So I'm going to say that the Raiders need to win con-bleeping-vincingly on Sunday. I think anything less, of course you take a win. I'm not, you know that.
100%.
But anything less than convincing, I think would be a little bit of a disappointment.
Yeah.
I think the Raiders turned a little bit of a corner on Sunday. I don't know how it's going to play out exactly, like if that running game, to your point, is going to get, you know, untracked. If I'm the Raiders, I would take some moderate improvement for sure. It would be great if they could just, you know, reel off 175 yards rushing and Zamir can, you know, go over 100 yards. This is a guy that, Vince, over the last four games of last season, And this is to all the, he lacks vision, he lacks this, he lacks that.
And there's a lot of
Zamir
right
White led the NFL last year in rushing over those last four games of the season. He led the NFL in yards per carry. Don't give me the nonsense that he doesn't have vision or that he can't break tackles. He obviously showed that last year. I know it was a smallish window size, but it was enough of a window size, I think, anyway. Especially against, there were a couple teams that were playing for something. Kansas City Chiefs were still playing for, what was it, home field advantage, I guess?
They weren't four throwaway games. They were games that they were meaningful. And as we talked about yesterday, anytime you play the Raiders, you strap it up, you're playing the Raiders. So it's a meaningful,
So Right, exactly. I see what you're saying.
So, okay. So you're a little unknown. Now, if I told you this, let me put a caveat in there, okay?
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Jackson Powers Johnson starts Sunday at Allegiant Stadium. How does your tune change?
I think it improves, and I'm excited for Jackson Powers Johnson. I just know that it's tough playing. We've already seen kind of Colton Miller struggle a little bit, getting back acclimated, right?
Yeah.
So to expect Jackson Powers Johnson to just be this Superman day one, I think is a little bit unrealistic.
And unfair.
So, yeah, probably a little unfair as well.
I mean, that's the other part. It is unfair,
100%. You would like to think.
Yeah, you want him to be, but it is unfair. It's absolutely unfair.
A rookie offensive lineman, But I think it will make an improvement, and I think in the long run it will make a massive improvement. That's why I'm saying, take steps in the right direction.
Yeah.
Average, get it over 3 yards per carry, and be able to stick with it and be able to, as Antonio Pierce talked about, comfortably be able to run Zamir White 23 times, If he gets 23 carries on Sunday, I think that's a really good sign that things are going well for the Raiders and that they're sticking with it and that they're having some success with it.
Yeah, Clay, wasn't that fast? I found it fascinating. We were talking all preseason, right, about the targets, the touches, who's getting. When my eyebrows went up when I heard Antonio Pierce say, we're trying to get Zamir White 20-plus touches a game.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, obviously, we didn't get to that week two, but that's the plan. That's why he's our starting back. And then he said, that's why I'm here. I thought that was an interesting 20-plus carries. That's ambitious.
That's part of his identity that he wants on offense.
He said in training camp 230 to 240 per for the season. So that's – I'm sure that average – I'm not a mathematician, but I'm sure that averages up to 20-ish a game, right?
It does, and that also leaves room for what would Madison do along with that. If you're running the ball that well, that means he's going to get a few carries. Next thing you know, you might have 30 carries rushing attempts right there. So that's something that you could easily take a look at and like, all right, finally, you got an offensive line that is able to do what you're looking to do.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because I think we all looked at week one, we're like 60 snaps. Man, that is low. That's real low. Week two, 63 snaps. Now I'm sitting there, I'm like, all right, are these the number of opportunities this offense
definitely
is able to create? Definitely not what they want. But, I mean, again, small sample size, small little picture. But, all right, 60, 63. You would hope that number goes way up. This Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you hope there's some long drives in there that
80 total plays would be good.
That would be a significant jump, but I agree with you. I think that would be but in terms of the question, is the run game going to get on track? I like to go on a limb. I like to just put it out there. I'm going to say yes. Because the bar is so low at this point that just getting anywhere near the track right now seems to be on track. 4 yards in the first half. Week two.
Right.
Four.
They only threw for 64, too.
I am uber confident that they're going to have more than 4 yards. So,
but when we're talking about improvement,
he's a betting man.
Let's say
I'm not a betting man.
Mr. Risky. No, but
They got to get to about 70 yards in that first half to me.
That would be great. Yeah. Somewhere between 50, 60, 70
is a nice benchmark. 70 is a nice benchmark.
And I think, the more I think about it, I don't think that we talk about this, you guys. Coaches don't say anything without usually thinking things out a little bit. I do think that Antonio speaks off the cuff and from the heart, but I also think he knows what he's saying. And his description And laying it at the foot of the offensive line the way he did on Monday, and we'll talk to him again today, I think was highly intentional. I think that and it's something that he didn't walk into the meeting room right after he spoke to the media on Monday. It's nothing that he didn't say, and there were probably way more colorful terms being used when he was talking face-to-face to the players. So there's nothing that he's going to say to us that he's not going to then say to the players.
So
there was... there was an intentionality behind it, and I think that if you're one of the offensive linemen, you're getting that message. You have to be getting that message right now. So he's putting it at your doorstep, and it's on you to if you're going to see improvement, you have to. That's where it's going to start in the offensive line. So I would imagine that this is a pretty highly motivated group. And it helps that they're playing a Carolina Panther team that's wounded, number one. They don't have Burns anymore on their defensive line. They've taken a little bit of a step back on their defensive line. It's ripe for the taking right here. This is a game where it should get right for the Raiders, running game. Now, I'm not saying 250 yards. That would be ideal. That would be great. But they have to get over 100 yards in this game, I think.
I mean, the Chargers, again, the Chargers are the Chargers, and we've talked about their offensive line and the tackles they have. It's the talent there is obvious. They rushed for over 220 yards, 44 carries, I believe the number was, Clave, what we were talking about yesterday. Yards are there for the taking.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, is Raider Nation salivating for JPJ. I know that, again, it's unfair at him as this some savior of the offensive line. But the talent, the potential that he possesses is tough to ignore, impossible to ignore.
Right.
You saw him celebrating on the sidelines on that Devontae toe-tap sideline catch. You see him jumping in the air. This guy's got a good vertical. Mm-hmm. I don't know what his vert was at the combine, but like he upped it on that sideline celebration. So fans see that, right? And there's just a lot of excitement. So we'll see what that looks like. Raiders back at practice today. We'll talk to Antonio Pierce.
Walkthrough today.
A little walkthrough. Close to us.
A little walkthrough.
They don't want us to see the walkthrough.
Yeah, I think, and the more I think about it, a massively physical game on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
So the cross-country trip, the travel.
Just working out. Just getting the...
This is a smart team, I feel, and you're starting to put the game plan together. No sense necessarily, and really getting after it today. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I don't think we gave enough credit to Antonio Pierce and his staff on the decision making. We talked a lot about it last week about the decision to leave later than normal for that East Coast trip. What he did in terms of building practice times and getting guys to the building earlier. For that early start.
Smart.
Because say what we want about the offense and not executing, right? They were there to play from the get-go in terms of the physicality. The defense set the tone. But they looked more ready in week two than they did week one. And I thought they were flying out of the gate week one. So, again, hats off to them. This is a staff that, again, we talk about him being well-insulated with former players, guys who've done it before, Marvin Lewis, things like that. Talks to Tom Coughlin every morning. Mm-hmm. He understands the experience as a head coach may not be there for him, but around him, he has got the experience in spades around him. I think that's fantastic. One guy we have not talked about a lot, Gardner Minshew.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about a guy that's been able to – I feel like the narrative around Gardner is a little more relaxed, a little more like – Okay, that's okay, Gardner. Like, that's what I could hear Raider Nation every time he made a throw. And he met with the media after the game. We have not heard from him since on this show. So let's take a listen to the Raiders starting quarterback, Gardner Minshew.
It felt great, man. Started getting Tay really involved. Brock was balling. Cove had a huge catch. Z had some runs. Like, that's what it can be, you know, and that's a challenge, is to be consistent with that. I look forward to continue to build on that momentum. I think everybody feels pretty great about it. There's a ton of tape to clean up, and we're going to do that. But I think everybody feels and believes what we can be as an offense.
Gardner, I know it almost sounds like a cliche, but when you play complementary football, good things can happen. I mean, there's 13-0 over the last 9.5 minutes of the game. That means defense is playing, you guys are playing. Is that basically what it kind of comes down to?
Oh, absolutely, man. Like, First off, they were playing great, like, the whole time, pretty much. You know, Max is, like, an animal. The turnover there, like, giving us the ball right there was huge. And, man, for them to just stick with it the whole game, like, they just kept coming to us, like, hey, y'all got it. Like, we got y'all. Y'all got us. We're going to find a way. And I think that was an awesome feeling for a team to have.
Was there anything specific in the second half? Why it opened up like that, or...
I think it was about us, man, just executing better. I didn't play good enough in the first half. I thought protection was really good in the second half. And then we just had guys on the outside making plays.
Some of those Devontae Adams catches down the stretch were pretty outrageous. Do we feel like a connection with him there in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, just throwing the ball, you know, when he's one-on-one, like, shoot, that dude makes you right, you know, and even... you know, a couple times getting pass interferences, whatever, like, those are huge plays for us as an offense. So being able to give him opportunities to get his hands on the ball is going to be really important for us.
He has said, hey, you know, I might look like I'm defended, but I'm actually not defended. For a quarterback, does that sometimes, a little bit of a hurdle that you have to overcome? Like, he literally isn't, he's Devontae Adams, he's not really guarded.
It's different, you know, understanding, like, how to, you know, play with a great receiver. He's told me before, like, if you don't know how to work it, sometimes it could be harder, you know, because you force it, and sometimes you force it into tough coverage when you shouldn't, and there's times you should force it when you know, when it works. But, man, just really love playing with Tay. Look forward to continue to build that. I feel like we got a lot going down the stretch, and just understanding, you know, just to give him chances.
Going into the second year in a row, you had a comeback victory here against a tough defense. What's been the key for you against these guys?
Man, I think just persistence, man. They present great challenges. They're always great against the run. They always rush well. You know, when you come in here, it's going to be a four-quarter game. Last year it was five quarters or whatever. But, no, you just got to keep playing, man. Keep playing. Keep giving yourself a chance. Defense came up huge for us. Special teams came up huge, and we found a way at the end.
What did you see from Brock today and his growth so far in the first two games?
He's awesome, man. He's so good. Like, great feel in zone, can get open in man. Had to, you know, take a shot to him on third down. He goes and makes a huge play for us. Man, I think he is going to be really special, and we got to continue to develop chemistry there and get him going.
All set, guys? Cool.
Right, Minshew's eyes bugging out and explaining how much he loved throwing to Brock Bowers and his explanation of and describing his play. His eyes really wide open. I think even he was surprised at how reliable and how effective and impactful Bowers can be.
Man.
Just the way he goes.
He's a big man guy. Just the way he uses man a lot. And did you see it was like, oh, man. And then, man. Like, there's different way he's
got variations.
Like, yeah.
But the way he said, and this, we break down tone, we break down body posture, all that stuff, right? But it's true. When Brock Bowers gets brought up, he went from starting quarterback of an NFL team to us here.
Fans.
Like, he's awesome.
Right?
Like, he's awesome. He's so good.
there were some cut-ups of Brock that I saw last night on this one particular route that they keep running where he swings inside, just basically circles around the defender and then cuts back the other way and just leaves. It's like it was three times.
Yeah.
And they made they completed passes on that particular throw over the last 2 weeks, I should say. And it's a thing of
it's money.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like the defender's like, where'd Brock Bowers just go? And he's wide open over here. And then when he gets the ball in his hands, then the magic happens. I think he's going to take some to the house, some long, long distances before it's all said and done. So we're watching a very special player kind of blossom in front of our eyes.
You know, there's a lot of hate this morning, a lot of anger.
And don't forget about Michael Mayer Trey Tucker.
Well,
I think both of those guys are, as it goes along, long season. They're going to get theirs, too.
I want to talk about Michael Mayer here coming up later in the show, but there's a lot of anger this morning.
Uh-oh.
You know, Good Morning Football. We love the show. Love those guys over there.
Angry, GMFB.
Angry Runs.
Angry Runs.
Brock Bowers was not a nominee for...
Huh.
And
he does it so gracefully.
And then, like, it's not angry.
Yeah. It's just poetry.
But the nation was apparently very upset, and Kyle Brandt heard it.
Oh, good.
I'm sure Akbar being on the show, he's got a little of a
right.
Raider Nation voice there. It's kind of also chirping a little bit. But, yeah, it was made known that people were upset. Brock Bowers, top rookie tight end. And Peter Schrager's number one rookie through 2 weeks of the season.
What did we say?
Rookie of the year nominee. I mean, all
best
pro.
Best player in the draft.
All pro in week two.
Yeah, and the bar none, I think, the best player in this draft. And I like Malik Nabers, and I love, you know, Rome Badunze, Nevada kid or Las Vegas kid, but Brock Bowers is something special.
We are going to dive deeper into the tight end room mm-hmm. and what it looks like, as well as the snap count coming up later on the morning tailgate. But coming up, Marcus Johnson. Tape don't lie. We're going to talk run game, Rock. Offensive line next.
Brings Mayer into the backfield. The handoff to Zamir. No, Minshew keeps it to the end zone for Adams. And it's caught. Touchdown, Raiders. Minshew pulled it out of White's belly and a quick throw to Devontae in the back middle of the end zone. And the Raiders, with 3:54 to go in the game, are an extra point away from tying this game. How about the Raiders?
Everyone knows the tape don't lie. It's Marcus Johnson's job to tell us the story behind the tape with the Morning Tailgate on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Yeah, welcome back here. Morning Tailgate Raider Nation Radio, and let's get to it. Marcus Johnson with Tape Don't Lie on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe and get the footage and all the homework that Marcus does for you each and every day, each and every week. And we're happy to have him with us here on Raider Nation Radio. Marcus, good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. All right, just going over some of the things that you noticed on that fourth quarter drive. We come back with that Devontae Adams touchdown. What was different about the way the offense was able to spread it out and actually find guys downfield going vertical?
I think Gardner Minshew was just more decisive in the fourth quarter. I think early in the game, he was very timid to throw the ball down the field. There were some open plays that he had that he kind of just let go and decided to check him down instead. And I think that's what the change in the fourth quarter is, that he just decided that he wanted to just start taking some chances downfield, because it was that time, especially when they were down 23-13. I think the drive right after that, even though they just got a field goal, I think the throws that he made on that drive kind of got the offense going too. So, you know, it started with the interception and they were able to go down and score. He made a big play there. And then the throw he made to Adams on the 2nd and 20, I think that really got the offense going. And then the next play he made, and then, yeah, they only got a field goal out of that drive, but they were able to come right back down and score again. And I think that he just started getting the flow of just trusting what he sees downfield and throwing the ball downfield, because, like I said, earlier in the game, like even the interception, he had Jacoby Myers open that he could have hit. You know, there's a big play on the first drive on 2nd and 17 where he had a guy wide open. He just kind of checked it down. And his mindset kind of just changed going into the fourth quarter. I think that was the big difference. It's him just taking chances and trusting what he sees.
Cool. Marcus, I'm trusting what I'm seeing, and I think we're all trusting what we're seeing in Brock Bowers. The young tight end from Georgia has just been a stud so far to start this season, and really had a great game on Sunday against the Baltimore Ravens. Talk about what he's doing from a getting open standpoint and a route running standpoint that's made him so special so far this year.
I think one thing that he does really well, he has great change of direction that you don't see from a tight end. So, you could put a corner on him, you could put a safety on him, and he just has a lot of looseness and wiggle in his hips that he can get open really quickly with a change of direction. Like, there's one play that wasn't a big play, but it was like 6 or 7 yards, I think, on the drive to be scored a touchdown. He was guarded by Marlon Humphrey in the slot, and he was able to set him up and get Marlon Humphrey to think he was running the out route and then go back inside on a dig. And that's against one of the better corners in football. And so that kind of shows how he is as a player. And even some of those big conversions he got on that same drive where they scored a touchdown, he was able to, you know, beat safeties easily. He's just with just great route running skills. What they did a lot in this game, which I liked a lot, was they moved these guys around a lot, and they did basically a lot of choice routes with Devontae Adams and Brock Bowers. So I think we're going to see a lot of that going forward. We know Brock Bowers has that ability to go any direction he wants to, and he does a good job of reading it too. I talk about Travis Kelce a lot when it comes to Brock Bowers, but that's who he reminds me of, and that's what reminded me of Love when he was coming out on film, because, you know, he's not the greatest blocker in the world, but he also just has that route running ability and that catching ability and that big play ability that you just love. And we haven't even seen him break three tackles and take a touchdown yet. So I think that's going to start coming pretty soon here. And he has that ability to win downfield as well. And I think we're going to start seeing that too.
Marcus, let's get into it. The run game, the offensive line. What are you seeing? What is amiss? What is askew?
So with the offensive line, I think it's a couple things. So I think one is I think the inside, the interior. I mean, just mostly the left side. I mean, Andres Pete was really bad, and then Andre James has been struggling a little bit. Those guys are just kind of getting bullied around right now. And then it kind of, like I was talking about last week, if you have a couple guys getting bullied, then it goes through the whole offensive line. And then Thayer Mumford decided to join them this week, which is the biggest problem. He decided that he wanted to join James and Pete, but Whitehair came in and played pretty well. But Mumford had a really bad game in the run game this week too, which was very surprising because he's been good there for the at least was last year. He was against the Chargers, but we saw him this game. He really struggled. He even struggled in pass protection too, but he really struggled in the run game. But you know, also a little bit is finding out what these guys do well. And you know, I talk about Zamir White running zone, and I posted a couple clips there, and I think he has a little bit trouble of reading zone, but as soon as they go counter or things like that, he's at least getting 3 yards every time, or he's getting a break for eight. All his runs that have been longer than, what, say 5 yards have come on power runs. So I think it's a mixture of them not maybe trying to, you know, put and do things with Zamir White that he really can't do really well. And then, you know, and then Madison does those things better, and then Madison's not getting a lot of carries either in those situations. So they got to mix it up. I think they got to go more power with Zamir White just to get him more comfortable and get him to bigger runs, so maybe he feels a lot better and he's not thinking too much when he has to run zone later on in the game. But it's a mixture of both. I think the guys, even when they win, to be honest, the offensive line, they're not getting a lot of push. So you're not seeing these guys bully people around. I think that's when Jackson Powers Johnson, he's going to make a big deal when he comes back.
So I guess just to follow up on that, you're saying it's not necessarily missed assignments. It's literally getting pushback or not their powers. But when you say we need to run more Zamir White power, like that feels like that's a tough sell when they're getting pushed back, right?
Yeah, but you know what you have with Zamir White is, you know, you have the pulling guard with a lot of power runs. Zamir White, and you know, like I said, it's not really the outside guys, because when you have a lot of power, you see a lot of down blocks from the tackles. So you're going to see down blocks from Colton Miller. That's going to open up things. You're going to see more down blocks from Thayer Mumford, even though he did struggle this past game. So when you see how that pulling guard coming around and you have those down blocks, you're able to see the things open up, because the tackles are blocking well. You know, I'm not going to say they're blocking great, but I think they're blocking good enough and they're getting pushed. It's more the interior. If they're trying to run up the middle or if they're trying to do some outside zone, these guys are getting pushed back before they throw even cutbacks and things like that. But when you run power, you have more down blocks, and that way you can use Colton Miller in the run game a lot. He can open up things, and you know, and Zamir White does a good job of finding the hole in power, and then Dylan Parham can come around, or even Cody Whitehair can come around, and he's able to follow the blocker through the hole that's opened up by the down blocks from the tackle. So I think with power, it's not always about the interior getting pushed. It's more of a goal line thing. You see a lot from the down blocks too that come from the double teams from the tackles, and that's what Colton Miller does really well, is a lot of power, is getting those down blocks and pushing people.
We're speaking with Marcus Johnson from Tape Don't Lie at the Mark John NFL on X. With that being said, you brought up in the preseason that with the addition of Jackson Powers Johnson, perhaps he could help be brought along by a couple of veterans bookending him, Andre James, Colton Miller. But this time around, what if he were able to start week three against the Panthers? Could he also actually help Colton Miller and Andre James just by bringing a little more energy and not being susceptible to being bullied and being powered over?
Yeah, I think if Jackson Powers Johnson comes back, I think the run game is going to get a big boost, because that's what he does best. I mean, if you watch his film in college, I mean, he is a monster in the run game, and he's mean. He's an angry guy, and I think he brings a lot of attitude to what he does on the offensive line, and I think he'll bring an attitude to the offensive line and kind of, you know, make a big block, pancake somebody to get everybody going. Because, you know, the run game for the offensive line, you know, we love passing and pass protection, but the offensive linemen, they love running the football. That's what gets them going. If they can bully the defensive line and just run the ball down people's throats, that gets the offensive line going, and that gets them hyped. So I think somebody like Jackson Powers Johnson coming in is going to make a big difference, because there's going to be some pancakes, there's going to be some angry blocks, him, you know, maybe pushing the guy maybe too late, and, you know, and kind of doing those things, but not getting a penalty, I'm saying, but like just kind of having that anger and bringing that attitude that you need towards offensive line play, and you need towards the run game too. And I think that he's scheme diverse and he can do both things. So I think, you know, you get him pulling around the corner, it's going to be dangerous. And that's what I mean. Like if you get him pulling around, it opens up things. Zamir White's going to trust him a little more. far because he's going to know that he's going to be able to make those blocks in the run game. And that's where he is going to make the biggest impact, I believe, is in the run game and in opening up holes and just bringing that attitude that we need.
Marcus, what I'm about ready to say comes from a hopeful standpoint, because I think there's optimism in what I'm about ready to say. And part of which goes to Antonio Pierce talking about how there's a lot of meat that's been left on the bone, especially offensively. And so when I think of guys like Michael Mayer, the run game, Trey Tucker, I feel like there's places that the Raiders can go for additional yardage, additional offense in those three components. What are you seeing from Michael Mayer and Trey Tucker that gives you hope that eventually both players will be bigger parts of this offense?
I'll start with Trey Tucker. Trey Tucker, what he's doing is you can still see him getting open. And I think he's a little bit of an unsung hero this past game, because he was being moved around a lot in motion. He was kind of opening things up for everybody else, because you see that speed coming around the corner and you don't know what he's going to do. That creates a one-on-one for Davante Adams, or creates a one-on-one for Brock Bowers. Mm-hmm. And I think what he's doing right now has kind of been a little bit of a decoy with how much motion and how much they're moving around. I think he's getting a little bit involved in the reverses too and things like that. So they are finding some ways to get him touches. But what he's doing is he's still showing the ability to get open. So, you know, if teams find a way to double team Devontae Moore and come after him and guess he can't, move things around and get Devontae away from those double teams, you're still seeing that Trey Tucker can beat press coverage and he can get open. He's still a way better route runner than he was the year before. So I think there's still a lot of growth with him there that we're going to see him have more impact and finally probably catch some more deep passes once they get this run game going and they get the play-action game going a little bit more. We saw a little bit more this week, but I think with the play-action game going, they can get some deep shots to him if they get that going a little bit. With Michael Mayer, I think Mayer is kind of filling in his role too a little bit right now. I still think that he does a good job of getting open. And we saw some of those catches. And we saw a couple catches this week and a couple catches last week. It's hard when, you know, you have Brock Bowers and Davante Adams out there and you have Jacoby Myers. I mean, those guys probably going to be the main three guys getting the targets. So, you know, if they find ways to kind of shut down one of those guys or, you know, double team Brock Bowers or something like that and find ways to get the ball out of those guys' hands, that's when you'll see those guys get more targets, because I believe that they're still getting open. They're still running the routes that they need to run it really well. And I think going back to Trey Tucker, his being a decoy is really opening it up for Devontae and Brock Bowers the most. So those guys have their role on offense and they're really playing well.
I know Max Crosby's tape is always fun to watch, and especially on a Sunday in Baltimore like the one he had. So I'm not going to ask you about him because I know that was just pure joy. Jacorian Bennett, he just is jumping off the page in a very silent, in a very calculated way. As someone who breaks down that tape, what do you see out of Agent Zero, and how impressive has he been thus far?
I think he's been really impressive, especially in man coverage, which has allowed the Raiders to be able to blitz a lot more than they usually have, is because they can trust Jacorian Bennett to play man coverage on the outside. Just like the one play that he made on the deep throw to Lamar Jackson is very similar to the play that he made the week before with Quentin Johnson, where he was able to play through the hands on that deep route and be very patient and trust his speed, because, I mean, he runs a 4.3. He knows he's not going to get big deep. But you can just tell by his technique that he's so much better in man coverage. His hips look better. His hands in press coverage, when he lands in his punch, it looks a whole lot better. So he's just a more refined corner as well. And like I said, you can tell how well-coached these guys are, because they're always punching through the football at contact. We saw that a couple times even from Jack Jones. But the interception that he caused, Spillane got the interception, but Jacorian Bennett made the play. He was able to play through the hands and make a big punch there and knock that ball out. And that's where we're seeing a lot of growth from him, is that his ability to play the ball and show his ball skills that it really showed at Maryland. And, you know, I think some interceptions are going to start coming from this for the secondary eventually. But what it really does is allows Patrick Graham to be more diverse and find different ways to get pressure, because they can play man coverage in the back. I think they're playing man coverage about 21% of the time right now in the back end. And that's a total change and something unexpected that we didn't expect to see this year. We expect them to kind of do more zone and allow these guys to play more in space. But we're seeing them in press coverage, getting in guys' faces. I mean, Nate Hobbs is doing a great job in that too. So with Jacorian Bennett out there being able to play press coverage and playing great man-to-man has allowed Patrick Graham to be more diverse, and his growth is big for this defense and allows him to do more things.
when looking at the Panthers the last 2 weeks with Bryce Young, was the problem with their offensive line? Because I have a feeling right now with Andy Dalton on Sunday, they're going to try to get rid of the ball quicker, and they're hoping that they can finally find some consistency through the air. How will things change for the Raiders' defense? Will it stay the same, and what would you like to see against Dalton himself?
Yeah, I think when Andy Dalton comes in, the ball is going to come out quicker. He's not definitely Bryce Young. I think that's one of Bryce Young's issues is, you know, when he has his drop back is a little slow, and sometimes he can allow the pressure to come to him just based on his drop back and just how lackadaisical it is a little bit. So you're going to expect Andy Dalton to just have a better drop, get the ball a lot quicker, especially because the offensive line for Carolina is not a good offensive line. You know, they did put a lot of money into it, but one guy, Robert Hunt, he was playing with Tua, who was getting rid of the ball at 2.1 seconds. You kind of could see that there are some chances that you could beat him for sure. And they're really young on the left tackle and the right tackle. So they're putting in Andy Dalton in because he's going to get rid of the ball quicker. He's going to make quicker decisions. But also with Andy Dalton, you know, if you can get pressure on Andy Dalton, he's going to start making some mistakes. I mean, that's what the Raiders have to do with him too. It's going to be big to get pressure on him and make him make some bad decisions, because that's when his whole game becomes ugly. And, you know, you see throughout his history, if he has a clean pocket, Andy Dalton is not bad. If he has time in the pocket, right, he can find open guys, and he has a good arm, and his accuracy is a little hit and miss. I'm not going to say he's an accurate quarterback, but he can get the ball to where he needs to his playmakers if he has time. But if you can get pressure on him, everything changes for him, and that was always his issue. He becomes a totally different quarterback. So that's going to be the biggest thing for the Raiders with Andy Dalton, is get pressure in his face, make him make forced bad decisions, because they will come if you get pressure on him.
Oh, that's why we love it. Marcus Johnson with Tape Don't Lie. Go up to YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to Tape Don't Lie. Get the great information and analysis from Marcus Johnson and his crew each and every day and week. Thank you again, Marcus. We love it, man. We'll do it again next week. Thank you. And I'm glad you talked about Jacorian Bennett, because, as Marcus said, 21% of the time they're now playing man coverage because of Jacorian's ability to be so sticky and to be so good and having that speed that he's not going to get beat. At the same time, that allows the Raiders' defensive line to blitz more.
When we talk about cornerbacks, one of the greatest compliments that we can give them is that we're not talking about them, and that's because they're not throwing to them or because nothing is happening on that side of the field. I know the big highlight that everyone's kind of looking at with Jacorian is the one that resulted in the Robert Spillane interception. But, man, the play that really gets it for me happened earlier in the game. It was a third down. He's running a deep, step for step, breaks it up, perfectly clean, confident in his speed to stay with the man, confident to look back. Completely different player from a year ago.
Well, and another example.
And he's not a rookie. That helps.
Another example of good drafting.
Yeah.
Sticking with it, development, having patience, having an understanding, and
not punting when things go wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Not freaking out and kicking guys to the curb. This isn't Madden. You draft guys for a reason, understanding sometimes that it's going to take a little time and you're going to have to live with the ups and downs, but you believe in the player and you believe in your process, and good things can work out. So another testament to just patience and good coaching and good understanding of how this process sometimes works.
Coming up next, we'll touch on some interesting stories about NIL money in college football, all that and more here on Raider Nation Radio.
Hey, guys, I want to talk about our new friend over at Milano Nail Lounge. They're over at 3458 St. Rose Parkway, in Henderson, literally right around the corner from the Raiders practice facility. Milano is the biggest lounge in town, featuring a 4,000-square-foot facility and a support staff of 20 talented professionals. They do it all. Manicures, pedicures, acrylics, Gel X, hard gel, hybrid gel, dipping, and countless art designs. And whether it's for yourself or for a loved one, and guys, we know our significant others love being pampered, and that's exactly what they do over at Milano's. And right now, they're offering a 20% off promotion for all fans and an extra 20% discount for gift cards. So whether it's for yourself, like I said, or as a gift card for someone special, make sure you get over to Milano Nail Lounge in Henderson. Ask for Tony and tell him Vinny from the Morning Tailgate sent you, or just give him a call at 725-204-7384. You could also go online at Milano's Nails Lounge NV.com. That's Milano's Nails Lounge NV.com. Tell him Vinny from the Morning Tailgate sent you and ask for Tony.
Back to the Morning Tailgate with Vinny, Vince, and Clay on Raider Nation Radio.
Welcome back to the Morning Tailgate, Raider Nation Radio. Wrapping up hour number one on a Wednesday. We're gonna pause from the Raider talk for a quick moment for a story that I feel needs to be told. We're in, as Vinny was talking to us, we're in the Wild West era of college athletics and NIL.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian Wojnarowski just announced a Woj bomb. He's retiring from ESPN. He's going to become the general manager of the men's basketball program for St. Bonaventure.
His alma mater.
So, first time I've ever heard a college program announce a hire of a general manager, but that just goes to show you the times we live in.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it's essentially a mini professional team at this point when you're talking college basketball.
Transfers.
And football. That portal is a real deal. I mean, that's a 24-hour biz.
You need to be a name. You need to be able to recruit money. And you need to be able to, like, divvy it up. And I like where this is going.
Putting especially together for rosters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Money's king.
And he doesn't have to travel all over the country 9 months, 10 months out of the year.
Probably
I don't know how much he
phone.
Actually did travel, though.
I don't think he traveled a ton.
Yeah.
But in
He'll
terms
travel
of,
more, maybe, with a college basketball
that's probably
team.
True.
Yeah.
A story came across the wires, as they used to say.
Yeah.
But our wires here at the Morning Tailgate is Clay Baker. And
the ticker.
Clay is a master of finding these stories that just tickle my funny bone. The Arkansas AD, Razorbacks. You know, they're in that vaunted SEC.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the teams at SEC, they're probably on the lower rung in terms of where they stand. Let's just call spade a spade, right?
They got money, though.
Well, apparently that's the issue. The NIL money.
Calipari's not going there without money.
Well, it may be all there is what I'm saying.
That's, yeah.
The money for the NIL is not there right now, according to the Arkansas AD. In fact, they are at the bottom of the totem pole in the SEC when it comes to available NIL collective money, which is
right.
Collective is now the consortiums that, whether it's donors, businesses.
Another big word. Every day.
I got to get one for you.
Consortiums.
Nice consortium.
I love it.
Whether it's donors, whether it's businesses, whether it's influencers, whoever,
yeah.
They form a collective, right, to help fund these athletes to get bigger five-star athletes coming to the SEC playing for their program. Because the Arkansas, which is interesting, is not a hotbed for college football in terms of athletes compared to the rest of the Southeastern Conference and those
but
markets.
But they're close, situationally.
Situationally,
they're right next to a lot of hotbed states.
So Arkansas's AD had a great plan, Clay.
Uh-oh.
A fantastic plan.
On if paper?
If he just asked, if each household in the state of Arkansas, you know where this is going. If each household, $100.
That's all it is.
That's it.
$100.
He's saying $100 per household, which is about 10,000.
You can Venmo it.
10,000 residents. Arkansas's NIL collective issues would be gone.
Just $100. Forget grocery shopping.
You could spot a hundy, Benjamin.
You know, I know that the kids need some school equipment and some school clothes, but couldn't you find it?
Well, could you find another state other than Arkansas? Arkansas. Medium income per household, $55,000 a year. That's the third lowest in the country. Yeah, $100 goes a long way if you're making $55,000.
And the AD is asking.
Yeah. Send it to the program.
Whether he's saying it half sarcastically or not, the message is that he is asking.
Well, it's funny.
Because he's saying they are NIL poor is
right.
What he's basically saying.
Well, it's funny you should mention that because there was another story, and maybe we'll get onto it on the other side, but there was another story about how Tennessee is slapping a sales or a fan tax on tickets. It's like a 10% tax that goes directly to their NIL. And Rick Neuheisel today when I was listening to the college show on Sirius XM had some interesting thoughts on why this type of stuff might be happening, and it might not be what we're thinking.
It's interesting. This NIL conversation will continue next hour.
Yeah,
it's because there's a lot to get into because the Woj bomb kind of threw us off course with that news, but good for him.
Did Shams report it or did Woj report
no.
it?
No.
Yeah, who's the new Woj?
No,
somebody's
no.
got to get the scoop on Woj.
That would have been so appropriate.
Well,
had Shams broken the story about
you
Woj.
Know
that's,
what is,
that's the way it needed to go out.
You don't want to know it is appropriate? Woj drops the Woj bomb that he's leaving ESPN. 90 seconds later,
Shams?
Schefter.
Oh.
Breaks the news that he has signed as the GM for St. Bonaventure for the men's basketball program.
Oh, so he didn't report what he was
they
doing.
They were in cahoots.
Of course.
Yeah, they were in cahoots. It's the morning tailgate. Coming up, plenty more to come.